Let's kick this thing off. For old time's sake, let's play a bit of the intro music. Then, let's go on our first live episode. God help us all. So obviously this is the You Look Like Me podcast. Here we make sense of the life and families of donor-conceived people. We do not make sense of tech. Apparently, that is not what we're here to do. This is my story. It's also a place for yours. And to make that point, I want to welcome Amanda. Thank you so much for joining. We were going to do a regular episode, and then we thought, what would be better than a live episode? Lots of things, apparently, because it did not run smoothly, but we are up. It's so great to see you again, because obviously we have been. We've done stuff together before. We appeared side by side in the ITV doc, which was a lot of fun, but obviously I was there very fleetingly, and that episode was really centered kind of 50% around you and your story. And I know there's been loads of people who have watched, and I know there's been loads of people who weren't able to watch and really wanted to. So briefly, why don't you tell us a little bit about what was covered in your episode? What was your story?
Yeah, so I found out I was donor conceived in my early 20s, and I saw the advert on Facebook of all places for the documentary, and I just thought, why not? Let's see what happens. So they took my DNA, they put them on two of the main websites that exist out there. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say the names on the live podcast, but everyone knows what they probably are called. And then they told me my matches, and then they supported me basically to kind of reach out to who I wish to reach out to. Which for me was everybody involved. I know some donor conceived people just want to know their half siblings, some want to know who their donor is, and that's perfectly fine. I was really happy to kind of go down both routes. With the program, one of my half siblings was happy to be involved, and they filmed us meeting each other for the first time, which was really fun and really good. It also kind of covered like the different sort of things that were happening in the background, but quite fleetingly, there was another couple of half siblings that were happy to speak to me, but didn't want to be filmed. And also my parents' donor, so my biological father, also was happy to speak to me, but didn't want to be filmed, which is, up to him. So we kind of shortly covered that.
Yeah, amazing. And so obviously that episode, the reason I was there as well was kind of the balance of chasing the kind of your own emotions and what you feel you're entitled to learn and discover, and balancing that with your parents and not upsetting them. And I think what struck me when I met you was, you'd gone from this place of not really, talking that much about it and being very conscious of how it was going to be received. And then all of a sudden you're doing a TV show. Like, to me, my mind was blown. I was like, that is just one thing to the other. How did that go down?
Currently not well. My parents are not speaking to me. So,
Wow. Okay. I'm so sorry. That is not what I expected you to say.
I mean, obviously it's upsetting. I mean, I said this to you anyway when I met you. I mean, it wasn't on the program, but I pushed down all of my feelings for like 12 plus years, and I just got to the point where I was like, mentally for myself, I've got to do this for my own sort of mental well-being. And it's kind of got to the point now where if they can't accept that, I mean, I don't really know what else I can do. I just, that's how it kind of has gone at the moment. And we haven't spoken for, I think it was February time, maybe. So we're in May now, so 4 or 5 months.
Right. And so remind me, because I've forgotten as well, that came our episode would have come out in
Yes,
February.
it did, yeah. So I obviously had told them that I was going to do it, and I'd said to them, they weren't blindsided, just to be clear. I did tell them that I was going to do it. They never really like engaged with the conversation. They kind of just moved the conversation along if it ever got mentioned. So I was just like, okay, I've done my part, I've put it out there. If you don't want to discuss it, then there's not really much I can do. And obviously in the run-up, I was posting a lot about it on social media and wanting some people to see it and obviously join, to understand a little bit about sort of what our community kind of deals with, what goes through, different stories that were going to be shared. And I don't know if it became a bit difficult for them, I don't know, but yeah, they both decided that they were going to remove me from social media. And then when I questioned it, they said that we can't deal with it at the moment. So that's kind of been left as that, to be honest, unfortunately.
Wow. Yeah, that is the opposite of what I thought you were going to tell me. Because like you say, you have been so active on social media, and obviously people are commenting right now and just saying, you know, they're saying that they're really sorry to hear that as well, which, you know, all of us, it's a fear that we have.
Our worst fear.
But I guess because you continued posting about it, and obviously, you know, we've been sharing some before we did this live podcast as well, we were sharing that we would be doing it, and you were sharing it back, and I just presume, because you've been so strong on social media, I presumed that it had been received well.
I mean, for me, I just have got to the point where I thought, I'm not gonna sit in silence about it anymore. Like, it's not good for me and myself. So I just made that mental decision that I'm gonna live my life the way I want to live it, and if I want to share what I want to share, that's what I'm gonna share. And I mean, sounds a bit harsh, but that's my choice. You know, my life. They made that decision in that room 36-37 years ago that they were going to do this, and they didn't think that I would result and be a human person with like my own feelings and like thoughts about this. So, you know, I have kind of got to the point where I cared a lot about what they thought for a long, long time, but I think now I just have to kind of put myself first a little bit, because I have sort of put a lot of my own wishes and feelings to the side to make sure they feel comfortable, which is, you know, which I should do, absolutely, but I don't feel like that's been reciprocated back at all at any point by them. So I've kind of got to the point where it's just, we have to stop now.
I mean, I guess, and what I do want to make clear, and obviously, you know, I think it's worth chatting maybe in a few minutes time about, you know, speaking publicly isn't always a great idea, and it's because I think our community wisely is not trustworthy of the media in a lot of cases, and I think we need to be on guard with that. But what I will say is the ITV group, so obviously it was a production company who made it for ITV, I thought they were phenomenal, you know, and they did check these things behind the scenes. And I thought there was a good duty of care there. So I guess, you know, how was your, keeping in mind that a lot of the questions that we've seen kind of since this came out has been people who would consider taking their story public now in some form. Keeping in mind how positive I thought you found that process along the way, and obviously what's happened since, you know, how do you reflect on your time doing it, and what would you advise people who would be considering the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, Wall to Wall, the production company, were really, really fantastic. Like, from start to finish, they were very supportive. They offered counselling whenever I would want to have it. You know, even since the programme's gone out, everyone that was involved with me, so my producer that was on my story, the cameramen, they've all stayed in touch with me and checked in and made sure I'm okay. Yeah, I can't really say anything bad about the actual production itself. It was great. You know, of course, the only thing I wish there was a little bit more conveyed in the story that was in the background, but it was a half an hour of a programme that was cut down, and it had to be. Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, I have no complaints. And if anyone was thinking of doing it, I think that particular production, I would recommend to other donor conceived people.
Because they are thinking about a second series, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They've told me, well, the producer that I worked with told me that they have enough people interested that they probably can do a second series, which sounds really promising. I don't know if it's been officially commissioned yet, but they did say it was likely. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we get to see another lot of stories from people like us.
Yeah, okay. So bottom line, that production company, absolutely. But yes, now, how do you feel about your own?
How do I feel about, sorry, Lou, just that again?
How do you feel about your own involvement now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy I did it. Really pleased. You know, everyone, I would say 95% of people have been really positive about it. Like, have said, you were so brave, and like, you did a really good job. You know, came across really well. You know, it's only been a couple of offhanded comments made, which, to be honest, I think a lot of it comes from just misunderstanding or not being educated on the subject. Like, the usual comments of like, you know, why would you do this to your parents? Like, you know, they love you, they raised you, like, why would you do this? And I'm just like, you clearly didn't watch the program properly to understand that we all love our parents. We are all, you know, happy that this, you know, they're our parents. It's just that we deserve to know the truth, ultimately, about, you know, our biological family and who they are and where are they.
So you said the reaction from your parents. What about your, you know, your new family? How has that experience been? How have those relationships been?
Yep. So last week I was with one of my sisters that I found. So she lives abroad. So I went to visit her, stayed with her for the weekend, and that was really good. And I'm going back there next week again, because we're going to Paris together.
And actually, sorry, for context, so for people who haven't watched it, you found your biological, you found the donor, your biological father, and who else? You found a few half-siblings, didn't you?
So there were, at the time of the programme, there was four. There's now five. Somebody else has popped up since the programme. The donor also has a son from, you know, himself that he had, that he brought up. So there's eight of us in the pod, to say.
Oh my God. And that's a discovery literally from a few months ago, and there's already eight.
So there was another one that popped up just before Christmas, so that was exciting.
You said that you had plans, you've already met one, you have plans to see another. Obviously your half brother was featured in it. How's that going?
Good. Yeah, we went back and visited him in October. So we met in April of last year, and then we went back, me, my husband and my son went back to meet him all together in October, and we met his wife. There's plans at some point probably to go back and see them. It's just because we lived opposite ends of the country, as you can imagine, it's quite difficult to kind of just pop down to see each other like that. But we're in touch every day, we speak, we're in a group chat, very aptly named the Brood by the donor. So it's just one of those.
I love the names that we come up with for our group chats. If anyone wants to share their group chat names in the comments, I would be interested. I've heard a few funny ones. By the way, anyone watching, please do feel free to come in with questions as we move along. I'll try and catch them. And then if I come to questions at the end and I've missed something, just ping it through again. I will try and catch it. And also, I knew I was recording when the tech issues were going on. And I know I missed a few questions there. So please, if I didn't answer and you still want you want an answer, please do transfer a question over there as well. Amanda, there was a moment in the doc that I loved for two reasons. And it's when you're opening your results on camera. And the obvious reason that I love it is it's just such an incredible moment to watch in real time. You don't normally share something that intimate with someone. Mm-hmm. How did that feel, and how did it feel? You know, because when you watch it back, obviously it seems very natural, but there's a camera like right in your face when you're on the other side, you know, and sometimes it doesn't feel natural at all. So what was your experience of, one, going through it and opening up those results in the first place, and then, two, kind of being observed doing that?
Well, to be honest, I didn't think it was real, because in the run up to them filming me, they were like, we're going to come and we're going to do your introductory filming just to get to know you a little bit. And at one point in one conversation, somebody did say to me, we're not going to give you your results this weekend. So they kind of already gave me a little bit of a hint that wasn't going to happen. And then when we were filming a lot during the day, obviously, if anyone has worked on any of this, a lot of the time it is natural, but sometimes they don't get it on first glance, so that you kind of have to repeat what you're doing. So they might say, oh, sit at the table and type on your keyboard again, and you'll have to do that three or four times. So when we were doing that sequence, they didn't tell me it was real. They just said, oh, we're going to film you, like, you're going to get your results, sit down here, here's the laptop. They did not tell me. So that was completely 100% authentically real. I did not know what I was looking at. They were like, oh, click this button, and it just came up, and I was like, oh my god. So I did not know. And they did the same thing to my husband. He had a section in the documentary where he came into the kitchen, and like, they kind of had said to him as well a similar thing, like, it's not real, we're just gonna, you know, this is for the filler of the program. And then when we were showing it to him, he was a bit like, oh, okay, like, he doesn't seem that bothered in the clip. But like, afterwards, when he realized it was real, he was like, oh, okay, it's real, like, what, like, you know, it was a bit stage managed, I want to say, not in a bad way. I actually prefer they did it that way, because like you just said, I feel like if I'd known it was actually going to happen and I had a camera in my face, I probably would have gone to pieces. So actually, it was probably better for me just to kind of be completely in the dark. But I can appreciate some people might not like that. So it's a bit much, maybe, if you're not ready for
I
it.
mean, I guess, yeah, but that's how you get the authentic result, actually. And the reason I ask is because I actually did the same thing. I was part of a documentary, again, a kind of production company. I can't remember where it was meant to be published, but this was years ago. You know, this is before the interest was really there. And I did get sat down and I did get told you're opening your results. And this is before I had a single match. This was around 7 years ago, I guess. And I opened my results on camera and I had an executive producer and a producer in the room. And I had, you know, a proper camera literally where this is. So, like, less than an arm's length away in my face. And I opened it to no matches. And I hated that experience. I really hated it, because I was in denial about how much I wanted to find a match, and because, you know, also because I knew they wanted me to get a match, not even just for like, oh, it's better TV, but like we had, you know, you do bond with the people if it's done right. You bond with the team you're working with, especially when they're following you along, right? And they were like gunning for me, you know, they wanted a match to be there. And I just felt the second I saw no match, I just felt this pity wave onto me. And I don't know if that was real or not, you know, I don't know if they felt sorry for me, but I felt that they did. And I went into protection mode and just I went so defensive and I was like, it's fine, don't actually care, you know, like whatever. And it wasn't fine, it was awful. So it was really interesting to watch you do my experience and have something completely different on the other side. And thank God, but it just reminded me that it's awkward being filmed at your most vulnerable.
Yeah, for sure. I was really mentally prepared there would be nothing. I didn't think there would be anything. So when there was four sips and the donut, I was very shocked and I was a bit overwhelmed by it. But then as soon as I was like processed it a little bit, I was really happy because, like you said, I did want that inside. So like, although I'd mentally prepared for nothing so that I couldn't be totally crushed, I was also really happy and kind of on a little bit of a high. So it was good for me. I think if I'd had a similar situation as you, I probably would have felt that as well. And like being filmed probably would have been very difficult. Like you said, it's very upsetting, especially like when you are actively searching for people and you do find nothing. It's got to be absolutely soul crushing. It just in general, if you're doing it in private in your house, let alone with people, you know, sticking a camera in your face. So, you know, of course, you know, you've got to be prepared for those moments maybe that are not so great.
Exactly. We've got a question coming through. Someone's saying that they emailed their donor 5 days ago. They're waiting and hoping for a reply. How do you deal with all the emotions? You've done it more recently than I have. Do you want to take that?
So yeah, I mean, I think the really good thing for me was that because I had the wall-to-wall production, they had what's called an intermediary. So I didn't actually personally reach out to the donor. They gave me lots of tips of what to write in my first letter. So they said things like, you know, introduce yourself, a little bit about yourself, like your age, a rough idea of where you live if you don't want to give it away too much. If you know what you do for work, maybe just general things about yourself, what interests you. They also recommended to me that I should be very clear that I wasn't like looking to you know crash into their life, and I didn't want you know to go at anything you know beyond anything they were comfortable with. And yeah, so for me, I think I had it a little bit easier than most donor conceived people because ultimately I had that sort of expert to kind of helped me through. I mean, I'd wrote a draft, I sent it to her, she then read it and then said, oh, I think this is great, this isn't so great. And I believe, I'm pretty sure they wrote like a covering letter and sent it. So their letter was first to say, hi, this is so and so, you know, and explained the situation. So I feel like that was probably a good way to go about it. If you want to, I don't know, I've not had any other experience of doing it any other way. And I'm kind of glad I did do it that way, actually. Maybe it would have been less better received if it wasn't official, maybe. I don't know. I'd obviously have to ask that question. or maybe it was it more daunting for them because it was a bit like, wow, there's a person reaching out to me and there's an intermediary involved, what's this all about? You know, so it might be better perhaps to do it a little bit of less invasive way. Depends on the person, I suppose.
Well, exactly. You know, I think we can get bogged down by playing the game of speculation. And the thing is, we don't know the person on the other side. We don't know which approach will be more intimidating or less intimidating. So at that point, we just have to trust ourselves, right? Yeah, I mean, I'll say, so I haven't said this on the podcast yet, but we have had sibling matches recently. And we have reached out and we have not heard back. And I think it's so easier said than done, because I'm a few years into this process now, you know, and I have had the connections and I've had people willing to form a relationship. So I guess not hearing back sits a bit better with me now. And I always, the approach I always have is, you know, life is long and things happen when they happen, and people might change their mind in 5 years' time and then you have this relationship, you know, and I guess that's kind of the hope. But you do, I guess, just have to be aware that, especially, you know, in these cases of multiple siblings, and obviously this would apply to donors as well, you're just not guaranteed the reply you want or a reply. And there are people in my family unit who are struggling with that at the moment, in terms of these newest matches. So we've matched with three siblings at once, basically. It was before that, actually.
Oh, okay.
But I think, yeah, it's difficult. It is difficult. And, you know, you can say, just, you know, what's the advice? Let it go. That's kind of bullshit advice as well. Like, because it's so funny. Like, when it, yeah, I mean, how do you deal with the emotions? I guess the best advice I can give is you can lean on this community, how we've built it, and the people who make it up as much as possible, because people are always, you're always going to find someone going through what you're going through. And if there's people who are empathetic in your own family, that's a good way too. I hope that somewhat answers it. I know it's probably, you know, a bit wishy-washy and unfortunately not a definitive answer to that. But yeah, do keep questions coming in. Especially, I know loads of people wanted to ask Amanda stuff. Someone asked what you drank in a pub, or if you'd order a large glass of wine or something like that. I'm sure.
Right, we're not going to give away who that is, but that is somebody, and they've been endlessly teasing me about that stupid rosé order. I just
is that because you ordered a small.
That was like at 11 o'clock in the morning. I didn't want to drink an alcoholic drink, but they wanted me to drink an alcoholic drink to kind of in keep with the story of me being at the pub when I found out. And like, I didn't want to drink anything, and I was just like, I don't know what to order. I panicked, I ordered a rosé. I didn't want to drink it, so I thought, small, so it's not wasteful. I've been an eco warrior. It probably wasn't the right choice at the time, but yeah, I've been endlessly teased about this ever since.
I did have a little giggle, but mostly because I was just like, no British person has ever ordered a small glass of wine.
I know, I'm letting us all down. I'm really sorry. But yes, that is the reason why it was small and why it was really like unprepared. And yeah, I just didn't want, yeah, it went the wrong way because I kept thinking, oh my God, people are going to tease me endlessly if I order something ridiculous. And then I ordered the most ridiculous thing. So then I just got teased endlessly anyway.
Of all things that you could do wrong on or something like that, I think that's best case scenario.
Yeah, for sure.
And then have you been approached since that by any other media outlets, anyone else who wants to? Interesting. Okay.
No, nothing at all.
So my next question was going to be, you know, have you said yes or no? Only because I know more often we are getting approached to be in things and talk to people. And I personally have turned down a lot of things. and you know there's outlets. I would never say no to an outlet for the sake of it, I don't think, because I think the audience is always the important thing. You know, we need to hit as many audiences as possible, but I would turn it down because of, you know, former treatment by a journalist or yeah, sometimes you just get a bad vibe and you know you don't do it. What was it about this that made you go, okay, I can trust these guys. These guys are going to honour my story. Why were you happy to do this?
Yeah, so Rachel, the producer that was, you know, I think she was like the executive producer across for everybody. She called me that first time and we spoke to each other on the phone for probably about an hour and a half. She seemed very genuine and caring, like, you know, and then we had a Zoom sort of face-to-face meeting after that call again, was very reassuring. All the way through, they kept saying things to me like, look, you know, if you get like halfway into this and you just don't want to do it anymore, just let us know. We're not going to be upset with you. We do understand this is very emotive. We do understand that this is going to be, you know, hard. It might get to the end anyway, that if you do find anybody, you know, or, you know, if no one wanted to be involved, there wouldn't have been much of a story. So like, if I just had my matches and then it was a bit like no one kind of wanted to be involved. So thank you, Guy, for being involved. They might have cut me out because I get the feeling that they were working on quite a lot of stories. But of course, as you said earlier, with your sort of, you know, your experience where you had done this previously similarly with having a test and then opening it in front of them and then there was nothing there. I mean, unfortunately, they want to make a TV program. And if it's very, you know, anticlimactic or nothing happens, then it's kind of going to go down that route. But they never once made me feel like that was going to be a problem. They kept reassuring all the way through, you know, if nothing happens, it's fine, you know, we're still going to be here, you'll still have access to all of the counseling support, etc. The people who came, and obviously like you said earlier as well, you kind of bonded with them. So obviously you met some of them when we filmed together anyway, so they were great. Obviously we had them all the time with us. They made me feel comfortable. They were really great people. Yeah, I mean, I didn't at any point feel like it was getting fishy or weird. They asked me lots of questions. I mean, as I said earlier, not all of it made cut. You know, there were some things I feel like should have been shown, but I understand it's a TV program. It needs to be reduced down into sort of a story and it needs to go and flow. We could, you know, waffle on all night and, you know, they put every single second in. But yeah, I don't feel like they did a bad job of it. I feel like as well, we all know that this story can be viewed by some people as quite controversial. I feel for ITV prime time, it had to be sort of, you know, clinicized and washed down a little bit. So I do understand.
Yeah, that ever gonna it was go. Wholesome, wasn't it? Yeah. It was a wholesome documentary. Yeah.
It wasn't going to show the dark side of donor conception. It was always going to be a very fluffy, happy story, ITV style.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Of course. And I mean, that's kind of been my burning question for you, actually, ever since, you know, we filmed. And you did mention that there was a few things that, well, obviously we filmed and then I spoke to you after it went out and you said, just kicked my camera. You said there's a few things that didn't make the cut that I would have liked to share. What comes to mind? What are the kind of burning things that you think are important?
So I feel like they made like the whole situation with like my family quite, you know, they don't want to be involved, but it's all love and rainbows. But it wasn't love and rainbows as I started at the top of this podcast, you know. I feel like it would have been important maybe to show the truth, perhaps.
So from your point of view, what are the, obviously, you know, the production company's done what they've done. What lines would you want to kind of independently put out now? You would want it made clear that your relationship with your parents or their approach was a bit more turbulent than perhaps it was made out.
I think, you know, of course, as I've said, like, my parents are my parents, you know, I do love my parents, but there are things that have happened that obviously have hurt me, and I just felt like a lot of the conversation was around, I think I said it, and I did say it because they filmed me saying it, like, you know, I love my parents, I don't want to upset them. Of course I don't want to upset them, but there were a lot of times where I said things like, at the end of the day, I wasn't the person making this decision, like for 36-7 years ago, like no one's thought anything about how I feel in this situation. It's all been very much like they were the ones that couldn't have a child, they were the ones that were, you know, and a lot of the time when I've had conversations with them, it almost feels like to them, their pain is far more outweighing of mine. So like, I feel like their pain of like, not, you know, having to conceal this and it's being a big dirty secret was far more heavier and more important than my need to know who these people were that were out there, whether that be my siblings or the donor or anyone wider than that as well. Like, it just always felt like a bit of a, even now in conversations, like I think it's more older people. I think younger people are better at like recognizing this, but I did feel like it was dressed up in a little bit of a bow with like, you know, they don't want to be on camera, but they're all fine. But it really wasn't fine. And I did think about that.
But to be honest, that's the impression, rightly or wrongly, well, obviously wrongly, that I had as well. I did think, I guess just because you're a bubbly, happy person as well, you know, and mm-hmm. you were so ready to tell your story. You know, that part was very, very clear. I just thought it was kind of, you know, this is happening. And I don't know, I had it in my head. It was kind of going to be a sit down family affair to everyone would watch it go out. And then maybe a bit of an awkward conversation after. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, I can see that. But then kind of a bit, you know, meet in the middle. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think, sorry, you go.
No, I was just going to say, I feel like for me, obviously, I watched the entire series. I mean, I didn't have anything to do with any of the other candidates or participants before. When I watched it, all of them, I felt like every other person in that program, their parent or somebody within their family was so supportive, wanted to be on camera. And I just felt like I was kind of left out there on my own, other than my immediate family, my husband and my child. Like, nobody else really wanted to be in there and support me. And yeah, from my parents, I had nothing. Like, they didn't even want to acknowledge that it was happening. Like, I just found a bit silly and childish. Yeah. Almost, it's like, ignore it, it's not real, it's not happening, let's just kind of push this out of the way. And I was just sick of dealing with it like that anymore. I didn't want to do it anymore. I wanted to live in my own sort of truth, you know. I didn't want to be hiding how I felt or who I was, because, you know, this is a big part of me, and they created that part of me when they made that decision. So I mean, it's a bit hard to kind of, the horse is bolted now, you can't put the horse back in the stable, it's gone. So I just found that a bit hard, and I felt like I was the odd one out in the series, if that makes sense. Like, watching it, I was definitely the one that was kind of doing it on my own with not much support in the background.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that now that you say it that way, especially in the fourth episode, which is the one you're in, you know, that contrast is there, because not only, you know, the other person has their mum, but they also have their dad who raised them, the social dad, as people say, who is just like, yep, nope, completely happy for you to go out and find the donor, like, yeah. Really supportive. Yeah.
I loved it.
And yeah, you're right.
They were such a lovely family, came across so well, and I just was like, why can't I have this? It was a bit sad for me.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. Someone saying, I hate this big dirty secret aspect of being donor conceived. And I think, Amanda, I think you just said it really well, you know, their pain, I'm not gonna quote it exactly, I can't remember the exact words you said, but something along the lines of their pain, you know, feels like there's more weight to their pain than to mine. And I think a lot of us feel that way, yeah. You know, and it's not even like the pain that they went through back then either. It's like the pain now, especially like for the late discoveries, now that we know, it's still like chasing our truth and being vocal about it is still has less value and like imbalance than protecting them and keeping the pain away from them. And that's not right. It's not right.
No, it does feel like that is the struggle for most donor conceived people. They don't want to upset their parents, and rightly so, because of course, you know, they're our parents, but you know, sometimes you have to say this time is for me to deal, you know, to do what I need to do, whether that's that you're not interested or you are interested. I mean, it's a massive spectrum, as you know. You mentioned it earlier, like you've reached out to siblings recently, you know, I've had the same experience. Not all of the ones that I've matched with have wanted to speak to me or be involved, and it's sad, but I'm clinging and happy with the relationships that I am forming, which is great. You know, but it doesn't get any easier when that, you know, you get that new match and you message them all excited and you're, you know, really ready to kind of start a new thing with them, and then they're just not reciprocating. But yeah, you know, it's just one of those things. It feels like a bit of a burden for us, which obviously we didn't ask for, but we just have to keep going, I suppose. There's not really much we can do. It's the cards we've been dealt.
Yeah, no, exactly. And how did you feel? Obviously, you said there was an intermediary, pretend I pronounced that correctly, who reached out. But obviously, because you were mid-filming, did it add a level of stress to your experience to go, oh my God, not only, you know, are they reaching out and like have this big bombshell for him, but also, side note, we're filming and it would be great if you wanted to appear as well.
Yeah.
Did that add a level of like, oh, this is just too much that I'm putting on?
Yeah. So obviously I filmed in March, got my results in March, and I met my sibling on the program, Guy, within a couple of days. And it was literally like the day before we filmed as well. So that was all congealed into like a 10-day period. So that was a bit of a wild ride. And then it kind of went quiet for a while. And to be honest, Wall to Wall weren't massively keen about me. They wanted me to reach out to the donor. They were happy for me to do that. They weren't so much keen on covering that side of it, from my perspective, I felt. I don't know whether they just wanted to keep it to half siblings. I'm not really sure. But they did, of course, facilitate that. They said, here's our intermediary. Please use her. Please do what you need to do. And I believe at some point they obviously did reach out to the donor, and he replied to them and said, yes, this is me. And, you know, they did say that Amanda is partaking in a documentary. The way they said it to me on one of the calls, they rang me one day and they were like, he's really not happy about this. They worded it to me like, he will go no contact with you if you continue with the program. And I thought it meant just in general. Like, I didn't ever expect anyone to be involved that did not want to be involved. Absolutely not. But I just thought the way it came across to me was that it was like, he won't continue unless you completely stop. So I said to them, like, what do I do? And they were like, look, if you need to completely stop, you need to completely stop. But it was clarified later. It was just that he did not want to be involved with filming. He was happy to talk to me. He just didn't want to be involved with the program, which is fine, as I said. But it did get a little bit scary there in the middle, where it was kind of like my involvement with this had jeopardized the relationship I might possibly have with, you know, the donor. And it did worry me. I thought, oh my God, what have I done? I've found him in one great, you know, success. But then if this is going to stop me from, like, even speaking to him once would have been fine for me. You know, luckily he's been great, and we're still speaking to this day, and he's, you know, a wonderful person. But even if I just had that one conversation with them and saw one picture, that for me was all I wanted. I mean, I don't know how other people feel about it, but, you know, I mean, I've kind of ended up with a little bit of a cherry on top, but I was kind of just expecting, you know, an acknowledgement, maybe a photo. That was kind of, you know, what I sort of regulated myself to think that's probably all you're going to get, and, you know, that would be the best case scenario. Of course, it's been miles better than that, but it did get a little scary in the middle. It did get a little bit scary, like it wasn't going to happen for a period, but I think that was all just a miscommunication, because we were exchanging like emails, like it wasn't via phone, and maybe the message got lost in translation. But yeah, there was a period where I was like, wow, I've really mucked this up here. But luckily it did work out okay in the end.
But I mean, that is scary, because obviously, you know, I've got the podcast, so I do think sometimes, what if I match with someone and they're kind of willing, and then they Google this and they find, because they're going to find a lot of information very quickly. And I have the same thing, obviously slightly different, but like, oh my God, what if I've messed this up, like, you know, 2 steps before it even starts it? But I mean, we have to do what we have to do. And obviously at that point you didn't have matches, and this seemed like a route that was going to bring you to where you needed to be, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I hadn't done it myself beforehand. At some point I would have done it for myself, of course, like, but I don't even know what possessed me to enter that application when I saw it on Facebook. Instagram, to be honest.
So that froze from my side. I don't know if it froze for the audience. Say that last bit again.
I just thought my story was quite normal. And I say that with inverted commas because there's nothing normal about donor conception, but mine was very much a standard, you know, there wasn't anything crazy story. So, you know, I didn't think I'd get picked to be on the programme, to be honest. I was quite shocked that they wanted me to do it. I was a bit like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think you're right. They wanted, you know, this was a soft launch in many ways because, again, the media hasn't really been interested in this. Yeah. And again, you know, for where it's going to sit on ITV, it made sense that it was done this way. You know, from my point of view, I see this as kind of like a door opening. Yeah. And, you know, we can point to this and go, this did well. This, you know, it's like an intro pack to donor conception. And hopefully we can have, you know, documentaries that dive into the darker side and, you know, what we all obviously know exists. There's a lot more to be told. Someone's left a question saying that they haven't had any matches and they're looking for matches. Every time I open it, it freezes a little bit, but my closest match is perhaps my half great grand uncle. Any advice for finding family? I mean, again, I guess I would just say sign up and test with every single site there is out there. Mm-hmm. That's even the really obscure ones, because I think we found a match on one that I forgot we were even signed up to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it sucks and there's no guarantee. But the thing is, more people are signing up all the time.
Yeah.
So again, easy for us to say now that we sit here with matches. I know it's a very privileged place to be in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember not having those matches and how awful it was to sit with it. So yeah, I hope you find the matches you want. Anyone else want to jump in with questions? I know we're coming towards the end. I also know, I think I missed some questions from Claire, possibly on the other chat before we moved over. So feel free to jump in back with that. Any questions, any for Amanda, any for me, any for this, you know, weird experience in general, please feel free to take the next few moments to type out something, or again, comments, like I said. Yes. And then, yeah, I mean, I guess, so your advice by the sounds of it, and my advice is please check the background of the team you're going to work with. Yeah. And the channel and where it's going to sit and make sure you trust these people. Mm-hmm. And even if all of that looks legit, just trust your gut. Like, some people are not going to do our story justice. No. And they do want the salacious headline.
Yeah.
But is that kind of where you would fall with your advice to people as well? What have you been telling others?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think they advertised the series to two at some point, and it was on a lot of the Donor Conceived sort of Facebook groups, and people were like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this. And I did comment on a few saying, look, if anyone wants to ask me questions, I was on series one, email me, you know, write to me, DM me, whatever. I'm happy to speak about my experience, you know, and it was positive. So I've, you know, done that a few times when I've seen things on social media. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, looking back now, I probably didn't do that much research into this. I just kind of went off the vibe of like the meetings I had. I mean, looking back now, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. Like you just said, I should have really looked into it a little bit more than I did. But I just got a good vibe from Rachel, the producer that I dealt with on the main before it obviously all started. There's a question. Ooh.
Yeah, you can finish your thought. But yeah. No, I agree. It was, yeah, a good vibe. And to be honest, it just shows that you were ready to jump in with whatever methods you could get, really, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I thought to myself, to be honest, in my head, you know, a bit like this person earlier saying they had quite a long away match, I thought if I did have any, it was going to be like really far away matches and I'd have to do lots of like working out and sleuthing. So in my mind, I kind of thought, well, if I'm going to be on a program like this, like the long lost family sort of sit within that remit on ITV,
yeah,
they're going to do all that hard work for me. But randomly, obviously, mine was the easiest. I already had Sib sitting there and the was so I didn't need to do that. I could have done it all by myself and it probably would have been fine. But you know, when you're not done it, you've probably got that thought in the back of your mind, I'm gonna have to start trawling through birth records and building family trees. Do I have the mental capacity for this? you know, some people love genealogy. I mean, I am interested in it, but I don't know if I could sit going back through hundreds of years to work out who people are to link to donors and their
importance. Yeah, no, it's a whole process. I completely get it. And yeah, I felt even, yeah, so we matched with our bio dad's first cousin, second cousin, something like that. And even me trying to work back up the family tree, I was like, what am I looking at? So I completely get that. It is overwhelming. And then, I mean, it's worth saying as well, you know, we, even in the last 10 years, I've seen such a shift in people not wanting to speak out at all to now being like, should I be on this program? And I think that's amazing. And it shows this huge shift. But I also think it's important that, you know, there is that middle ground where you don't have to hide who you are and you don't have to carry this as a secret. You also don't have to go out on TV. You also don't have to be the voice for the donor community, conceived community. You can live in that spot of, you know, be true to yourself, be true to your family, be true to your friends, and, you know, be honest about it. But that doesn't always mean being on a TV show, you know, and for people who are on the fence about it, maybe that's the middle ground. Maybe that's how you ease yourself into. I think sometimes, and this is true for myself, we have kept this a secret for so long that you feel like you get to like this vibrational breaking point where you're just like, oh, I'm pulling the trigger. I'm going like nuclear on it. And we don't have to.
No, 100%. No, I do agree with you. Mm-hmm. It does feel like, yeah. A very much like you just said, kind of going nuclear, isn't it? Like just deciding one day, well, you know, let's just do this. And for me, a lot of it was, I mean, at the start, it was mostly for my own sort of, you know, to find people. Like I said a minute ago, I kind of thought we'd have to go through birth records and death records. And I just didn't know that I had the mental capacity to deal with that myself. So I thought, oh, let's deal with it this way. But then since I've been involved in the program, I've now become quite involved with like the donor conceived community, like on the Facebook group, and obviously speaking to you, listening to your podcast, listening to other podcasts that exist out there and other things. Like, you know, there are other really good like TikTokers I found that talk about this on their platform, and it's really good. And I just want to help like spread the word positively for us like now. So, you know, if that means that I have to be on a TV program, then, you know, I'm all for it. I'm happy to, I'm happy to do it for the ones that don't want to do it. You know, maybe that's the older sister in me, but I'm now no longer the older sister, which really upset me and put me really down in the pecking order. Cause you know, I was used to being the one in charge doing the ordering around. Now I'm not.
I'm third
youngest. I don't know how in the chain I'm like the third, I think.
Yeah, I was the youngest and now I'm not, so I'm that cursed middle child spot that apparently is the worst place to be, so I'm told. I don't know, but apparently. Claire has asked, how come we decided to do a live podcast instead of a regular one? I think for more interaction is the question. And I think that's, kind of the reason, just because I had been seeing how much people were engaging with Amanda on the Facebook groups and had questions. I think it just made sense to kind of, just get that interaction going and get the questions, because I know this is something people want to talk about, you know, taking this story public in whatever form it is, you know, whether it's public within your own life or whether it's public and TV public. That was the idea. We're going to wrap up now. Amanda, before I let you go, do you have anything else that you are dying to impart, any wisdom, any comments, anything?
I would just say that you've got to do it for yourself, and you know, as hard as that external pressure might be from your like family, parents, even from society, because I think society really pushes this narrative, doesn't it, that like, you know, don't go against your parents, don't, you know, do all that. I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, for your own mental well-being, just do what you need to do. And you know, there are, like you said earlier, there are so many people in the same position as us, and there's going to be someone within the donor conceived community that is very similar in terms of what they've experienced, what their story is, that you can lean on. They're always going to be there to speak to. And you know, I've not come across one person that I've met or spoken to that's been donor conceived that has not been an amazing person to sort of deal with and speak to. So that is probably my one takeaway from this whole sort of experience.
Yeah, no, absolutely, 100%. Someone's just asked, how many siblings am I in touch with, and have I contacted the donor? I am in touch with two half sisters, one half brother. And yes, we got in touch with the donor. I called him out of the blue. I think you can catch that in episode 4 of series 1 if you're interested in hearing that. I've always thought I should upload that phone call in full, just for the full effect. And then someone else says, I found your podcast so incredibly helpful, which is always my favorite thing in the world to hear.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sharing that as well.
No, your podcast saved my life, Louise. So.
Thank you so much. It's
And I've told
yeah,
everyone to
it's
listen to
been
it. I was like, listen to this, it's the best thing ever.
I love that. It's been so great to meet you. It's been so great to go on this journey with you. I have loved talking to you today. I have loved everything past the tech issues where
It
it all
was
lifted
fine.
up.
It was fine in the end. We both got here. We both had a conversation for an hour. It's fine. We did it. We managed
We
something.
did. Amazing. Thank you so much for joining. I hope that I will continue to receive updates from you about all your discoveries as they move forward. And yeah, thank you for everyone who joined.